Well, everybody's talking about a bump up ahead. You can feel it in your bones as a bump up ahead.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is February 5th, 2013, and the title of today's podcast is A Bump Up Ahead. The Beam team is here at Silver Star Ski Resort in British Columbia, and it's the Beam Dream Team. We're trying to cut that knowledge translation window down from an average of 10 years to less than 1 year. The SGEM tries to do this by using social media to get you, the listeners, the high-quality, clinically relevant, evidence-based emergency medicine information into your hands so you can give the best care to your patients. Today, we're going to be talking about appendicitis. So we're going to start, like we usually do, with a case. The case tonight is a 28-year-old woman presenting to the emergency department at 2 o'clock in the morning with steadily increasing right lower quadrant pain since 7 o'clock the night before. She has a past medical history of ovarian cysts. Her vital signs are stable. She's afebrile, but she is tender in the right lower quadrant. She has minimal peritoneal signs. Her blood work is unremarkable. Pregnancy test is negative. But ultrasound and CT scan are not readily available. So what's your management going to be? What's your disposition? Well, it's a good thing tonight with this Beam Dream team, I've got an appendicitis expert. So, Sunil, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about appendicitis.
Thanks very much, Ken. My name is Sunil Upadhyay. I'm an associate clinical professor of emergency medicine at McMaster University, as well as an associate member of the Department of Clinical Epidemiology and Biostatistics at McMaster. Just some quick factoids on appendicitis. As everybody knows, undifferentiated abdominal pain is a high-volume, high-risk complaint in the emergency department, with approximately 7% of total annual visits due to this diagnosis. 10% of closed malpractice claims are related to misdiagnoses of acute appendicitis in the United States. Acute appendicitis is the second most common cause of malpractice litigation in children aged 6 to 17 years old.
So that's going to scare people, right? That's going to scare doctors into doing stuff.
Very much so. And over a lifetime, the incidence of appendicitis is about 7 to 8% in males and females. Unfortunately, the lifetime appendectomy rate is higher, around 12% in males and 23% in females. Unfortunately, the negative laparotomy rate is about 10 to 20%, and the accompanying complications of appendectomies is about 4 to 13%. So there's a lot of unnecessary operations happening, and it's a real risk for certain patients, especially females, in their reproductive years that may compromise fertility in the future.
Well, it's a tough case, and I think that's why we threw out it was a 28-year-old woman, right? Just to make it more interesting for the SGEM listeners, because that's the real world. That's the real world in the emergency department that we're dealing with. It's messy, it's complicated, and when it comes to appendicitis, it's also dangerous, wouldn't you say?
I would agree, and high risk in general.
Well, it's a good thing that we have this case in front of us, because the clinical question we're going to ask today is, does a bumpy car ride predict appendicitis? And to ask that question, or sorry, to answer that question about bumpy car rides, there is a paper. And the paper is in the Christmas edition of the British Medical Journal. And it's entitled, Pain Over Speed Bumps in the Diagnosis of Acute Appendicitis, a Diagnostic Accuracy Study. And it was done by Flashdown et al. And I have Anthony, one of our Beam team members, to lead us from here on.
So my name is Anthony Crocco. I am a pediatric emergency physician, and I work at the McMaster Children's Hospital Emergency Department. I'm assistant clinical professor at McMaster University. This is something that we struggle with quite a bit in our emergency department when trying to make the diagnosis of appendicitis or figure out if someone does not have appendicitis. As one of the lead physicians in our department, I help out with physician-related complaints, and I can tell you that roughly 50% of the complaints that I get to deal with are related to physicians' misdiagnoses of abdominal pain and appendicitis.
Isn't the complaint part of the job the funnest part of the job,
it
Anthony?
It is a very fun part of the job, and if we could do anything
to make your job easier.
To make my job easier, that would be wonderful, whether that's a specific question or a specific physical exam feature or a diagnostic test. if there was some sort of magic diagnostic bullet that we could pull out of our pocket to diagnose or figure out who has appendicitis and who does not, that would be wonderful.
Would you say that it's mainly communication of the risks and communication between the physician and, in your case as a pediatrician, the parents and the child?
Absolutely. I would say that the big problem that we run into is folks being told or understanding from the conversations that they've had with clinicians that their child does not have appendicitis. And I always tell families that if I'm sending them home with abdominal pain, that I don't think it's appendicitis, but it certainly could be early appendicitis. And if X, Y, or Z are to happen, they are to come back to the emergency department. So I never promise folks that they don't have appendicitis unless I know that their appendix is sitting in a pathologist's office.
So we're sitting around here doing evidence-based medicine evaluation of this study. So Anthony, can you lead us through the PICO format for this particular research project?
Absolutely, Ken. So the PICO format, as I'm sure our listeners are aware, follows the population, the intervention or investigation, the comparison, and then the outcome. In this case, the authors from Great Britain were looking at patients 17 and older who were referred to an on-call surgical service by either a general physician or an emergency department. The intervention or investigation in this case was asking the patients about pain they experienced while going over speed bumps on the way into the emergency department or into care. The comparison was the gold standard that we use for these types of studies related to appendicitis, which was histological diagnosis of appendicitis. The outcome is really the diagnostic performance parameters, such as likelihood ratio, sensitivity, and specificity. Really, the design of this study is quite simple in its elegance, or elegant in its simplicity, and is a prospective observational cohort study of a general hospital in the United Kingdom.
Great. Thank you very much, Anthony. Now we're going to bring in the fourth member of this BEAM Dream Team here at Ski Beam 2013, and that's Joanne Talbot. And Joanne, you're going to go through the results of this study and help us understand how they fit in.
Certainly, Ken. Hi, I'm Joanne Talbot. I work in as an emergency physician at General Emergency Department in St. John, New Brunswick, and I'm part of the faculty at Dalhousie University as an associate professor. In this study, we are looking at, as Anthony suggested, in the PICO, the diagnostic parameters of the tests. So our test is whether or not a patient has pain going over speed bumps en route to the emergency department. They found in this small study they did that this has a sensitivity of 97%.
97%?
Yes.
Holy smokes, isn't that pretty good?
That's a very good sensitivity, yes. So for those who would like a reminder on what sensitivity is, it really is a ratio of the true positives over all the positives. So everyone who has the disease is a positive, and everybody whose test is positive is true positive. So if you take true positives over all the positives and you have a high sensitivity, you pretty much have everyone who has the disease. And so that's why you can use it to rule out disease. And that's where the mnemonic comes from, SNOUT.
SNOUT? What's
yes.
SNOUT?
Sensitivity is the SN part of it, and out means rule out. High sensitivity can rule out disease.
Oh, I like that. So if I've got a snout, I can rule it out.
That's right.
Okay, and what's the other side of that?
The other side of that is specificity rules in. And so it's SPIN. SP stands for specificity.
Oh, I could spin that, yeah. That's so SPIN right. Means they spin in?
They rule in disease.
So you can spin it in.
Specificity, yep. Then it rules in the disease.
Let me jump in here, guys. This is Sunil speaking again. Just remember that to add to the spin and snout mnemonics, a specific test has to be positive to rule the disease in, and similarly, a sensitive test has to be negative to rule the disease out. The mnemonics don't work if the test results are opposite to that. So a sensitive test that is negative will rule out the disease. A specific test that is positive will rule in the disease.
Thanks, Sunil, for helping us clarify that. Now, do you want to bring in likelihood ratios to this, Joanne, and explain to the SGM listeners what likelihood ratios were in this study and what likelihood ratios are?
Yeah, I actually really like likelihood ratios.
You like them?
I do. They're likely.
Great.
They're likable.
They are. I like it because it actually gives me a better idea about how powerful this test is to move me from a pretest probability to something that suggests the test is good, and I'm closer to a diagnosis, or I'm actually farther away and I can rule out the diagnosis.
Great.
So Joanne, I got to say just here, it's Anthony. I like it when you talk nerdy to me.
Thank you, Anthony.
So what were the likelihood ratios in this one, the positive and negative likelihood ratios?
So the positive likelihood ratio was 1.4. And like most ratios, if you have a ratio of 1, it makes no difference. So 1.4, that's not very helpful to move the test forward. So if you have a positive test, it doesn't really help you.
Okay, and what about the negative likelihood ratio in this investigation?
The negative likelihood ratio, on the other hand, was very good. It was 0.1. And in that case, it tells us that if the test is negative, then it's a very good chance that they do not have the disease.
So, Joanne, how did this bumpy car ride test compare to the other diagnostic tests they used in this project?
Well, they also looked at migratory pain, nausea or vomiting, and rebound tenderness. And pain experience going over speed bumps performed much better as a diagnostic test.
Really?
Both the other ones.
It was the best one.
It was the best one. The other ones had likelihood ratios, both positive and negative, that were very close to one.
Wow. So bumpy car rides was the best diagnostic test out of the four that were investigated.
That's right.
Isn't that incredible? Great. Well, thank you very much.
And if I can add to that, Ken and Joanne.
You're senile, of course, so maybe everybody doesn't recognize your voice right away.
This does echo a recent literature that's been published in major emergency medicine journals, both in Academic Emergency Medicine in 2009 and an ACEP clinical practice guideline in 2010 that confirmed that there is no single clinical, physical examination, or laboratory diagnostic test marker that either by themselves or in combination can definitively include or exclude a diagnosis of acute appendicitis in the absence of confirmatory imaging.
Which is probably why it makes it such a challenge and probably why Anthony gets complaint letters about it.
Absolutely.
Because it is a difficult diagnosis to make sometimes. So what we've been doing for the last couple of minutes then is talking a lot of EBM here, a lot of sensitivity, specificity, negative likelihood ratios, positive likelihood ratios. If people want to know more about this, there's a great book that came out recently by Dr. Chris Carpenter, and it talks about diagnostic testing used in the emergency department from an evidence-based medicine standpoint. I'll put it in the blog, and you can click on that link and pick up a book from SGEM. I think it's a great, or from Amazon. I think it's a great reference book people should have access to, especially when we're moving more and more towards picking tests appropriately.
And if I could add to that, Ken, also, for those emergency practitioners who want to read a very easy and well-written article about diagnostic tests and how to use them in the emergency department, I would refer you to the article published by Dr. Andrew Worster, the founder of BEAM, who published an excellent article on diagnostic testing in the emergency department in the Canadian Journal of Emergency Medicine in September 2002.
Sure, I'll throw that in the blog as well. Thanks, Sunil. Yeah. So the conclusions to this paper were, quote, presence of pain while traveling over speed bumps was associated with an increased likelihood of acute appendicitis. As a diagnostic variable, it compared favorably to other features commonly used in the clinical assessment. Asking about speed bumps may contribute to clinical assessments and could be useful in telephone assessments of patients. I'm going to go around the room now and ask our BEAM Dream Team what they thought of the paper and point out some limitations if they would. So we'll start with Anthony, you go ahead.
Thanks, Ken. So the biggest issue that I have with this study from a methodologic standpoint is that of generalizability. As a pediatric emergency doctor, obviously my patient population is not over 17, but in fact under 17.
So they don't drive to the emerge?
Generally not. And this is something we struggle with in pediatric emergency. Often we don't have a lot of literature to make decisions about care or diagnoses, and we have to infer from adult studies. But we recognize that in pediatric emergency that the data generated from adult studies is not always reflective of within the pediatric population, and we've seen this before in other diagnostic studies. So the issue for me is, can I use these results given that my patients are younger than the patients included in this study? The second thing that I noted from this study is the authors comment that the roads in the UK are allegedly smooth, according to the authors, with speed bumps, which is very different than the roads that I have seen in Ontario, which are generally not smooth with potholes. I'm not sure if potholes and speed bumps are exactly the same thing, and then can I infer a study generated on smooth roads with speed bumps to bumpy or to bumpy roads that are more potholes? So
perhaps we'll have to do a Canadian version of the study where we investigate potholes as the bumps, not speed bumps as
correct.
The bumps.
And I would argue, let's fill the car with kids of different ages and adults, all with abdominal pain, to see, you know, so that we can get an age distribution that will allow me to use the results.
Well, I'll count on you on starting that study. Joanne, do you have any final comments?
Yes. One of the limitations that I think is important in this study is that the patients are referred to a general surgical service because they are thought to already have appendicitis. And so this is a referral bias. You would expect then in that population of patients the rate of appendicitis to be higher. And so if the prevalence of the disease is higher, it can artificially inflate the sensitivity and the specificity, as well as the positive and negative predictive values.
Okay, so there's some referral bias. So Sunil, you wanted to talk a bit about that negative and positive likelihood ratios, didn't you?
Yes, I was just going to echo Joanne's comments that the prevalence of a disease in a specific population will influence sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, and negative predictive value. And the beauty of likelihood ratios is that these are parameters that are supposed to be immune to such prevalence effects, which is why they are superior metrics to report for any diagnostic test for any disease in question.
Thanks, Sunil. One of the limitations I thought was that it was a reasonably small study. There was only 101 patients included in the trial. But on the upside, it wasn't very expensive. It cost nothing to ask them, did they go over a bump on the way to the emerge and was it painful? And you get an instant result. You don't have to send it off to the lab and wait an hour. So the beam bottom line for this paper was that perhaps we should be asking our patients, was it a bumpy car ride and did it hurt? And maybe that'll help us with our diagnostic dilemma of appendicitis. This brings us to the Keener contest from last week. The Keener contest winner was Yifan Lin from Western University. He correctly differentiated random versus fixed effect model in meta-analysis, and I've sent him off a cool skeptical prize. The Keener contest this week is Steel Beam 2013, is coming up February 21st and 22nd. I want to know, why do we call it Steel Beam? If you know the answer, email me at thesgem@gmail.com and use Keener contest in the subject line. And finally, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you were taught it on the SGEM. Talk to you next week.